It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 46 degrees. At the airport, they indicate they have steady southeast winds at 12 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for cloudy skies mostly for the rest of the day, overnight tonight and tomorrow too. Look for south winds 15 or 20 today, coming down to 10 or 15 tonight, and all the way down to 5 or so tomorrow. Overnight low about 40 tonight. Look for highs in the upper 40s. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska lawmakers approved an additional $144 million in one-time funding for K-12 schools. Alaska's oil and gas lobby wanted expedited development in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, and they're going to get it. And University of Alaska officials are calling for a system-wide strategy to address the challenges and opportunities of generative AI. Those stories plus a big giant data center.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. South Carolina Republicans dealt President Trump a blow today, blocking a redistricting measure that would have pushed out the state's lone Democrat, Congressman Jim Clyburn. This after 3 weeks of rushed hearings and debates. Meanwhile, early voting for the June 9th primary got underway today. And Texas is holding a primary runoff today in a high-profile Senate contest between Republican incumbent Senator John Cornyn and State Attorney General Ken Paxton, whom President Trump endorsed. Iran says it shot down a U.S. drone after the U.S. targeted Iranian Navy boats. That comes as Tehran and Washington are negotiating a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and enter nuclear talks. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more from Tel Aviv.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio said a deal could be days away, but it's unclear how the latest military escalation will affect efforts to reach a deal. Iran said at least four naval officers were killed in the U.S. attacks. The U.S. says it was targeting boats laying mines. And Iran reported explosions around a city on the Strait of Hormuz. That's the strategic waterway crucial to the world's oil and gas supplies that the U.S. wants Iran to reopen. Israel's opposition leader Yair Lapid called the Iran deal being negotiated bad. He argued it would be a matter of time before another war erupts between Israel and Iran. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The Supreme Court is refusing to intervene in a discrimination lawsuit brought by former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores against the NFL, allowing the case to proceed toward trial. The justices today rejected an appeal from the league, which wanted the case handled through arbitration rather than in open court in New York. Flores sued the league and three teams, alleging it was rife with racism in hiring black coaches. Street drug deaths in the U.S. continue to drop fast, declining roughly 14% last year. That's according to the latest overdose report from the CDC. And NPR's Brian Mann has more.
U.S. overdose deaths peaked in 2023 with more than 110,000 fatalities in a 12-month period. They've been plunging ever since. According to the CDC, roughly 69,900 people died from overdoses in 2025, the lowest number of street drug deaths in a 12-month period since 2019. Experts say the drop is due to better medications for treating opioid addiction and wider access to health care. There's also been progress disrupting the smuggling of illicit fentanyl. Alabama, New York, and Virginia saw the biggest drops in drug deaths, but there are still problem areas. Arizona, New Mexico, and North Dakota have actually seen sharp increases in fatal overdoses. Brian Mann, NPR News.
Consumer confidence fell slightly this month as rising gas and food prices hit Americans' wallets. The Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index fell 7/10, the first decline after 3 months of gains. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. After 8 a.m. on Memorial Day, a Kodiak teenager was found dead in the Passaic Shaak area, according to Alaska State Troopers. Troopers say the 17-year-old boy was involved in a single-vehicle car crash and went off the road into the water and mud in Lake Rose Teed. The teenager, who was driving, was trapped inside the submerged car, and law enforcement say they were unable to immediately remove him when they arrived. The driver was the sole person involved in the crash, and troopers say he is believed to have died earlier that morning. Troopers did not say if alcohol was a factor or not. The state medical examiner's office will do an autopsy on the teenager, and the investigation is ongoing. Alaska lawmakers approved an additional $144 million in one-time funding for K-12 schools next year, as reported by the Alaska Beacon. The Alaska legislature has been divided and at odds with Governor Mike Dunleavy over the level of state funding for public education, even as districts across the state face significant budget deficits and declining enrollment, forcing steep cuts and school closures. Last year, lawmakers passed an historic increase to state funding for K-12 schools and added millions in sustained per-student funding, known as the base student allocation, but only after multiple vetoes by Dunleavy and an equally historic veto override by the legislature in a special session in August, restoring the funding increase. Lawmakers also approved an education package that establishes a student loan forgiveness program for teachers, an adjustment to state funding for districts and local municipalities, and a plan for the state to fund school district energy costs. Alaska's oil and gas lobby wants to expedite development in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, just days after the Alaska Oil and Gas Association petitioned the government for a new, faster permitting process. The Bureau of Land Management obliged, announcing it intends to write a new rule for the reserve. Drilling opponents call it a corporate giveaway. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
The idea is to avoid bureaucratic redundancy, because in a blockbuster lease sale in March, nine companies won leases on nearly 200 tracts in the petroleum reserve on the North Slope. Rather than have each company apply to the BLM for permits for each production site, the industry is asking that the agency make a rule granting permits as long as certain conditions are met.
Our goal here is to create greater certainty and consistency for what we view as routine development activities in the petroleum reserve, but continuing along strong environmental stewardship when we do it.
Steve Wachowski is president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, a trade group that proposed the process. He says the BLM could do one big environmental impact study covering the basic things that make up a production site.
So limited amount of gravel roads, development pads, drilling pads, that could be looked at, studied, with potential to be codified in the rule so we could go right to BLM and get a permit.
The request comes at a time when permitting reform has become a national cause. Producers of fossil and renewable energy alike are pushing Congress to make some changes because the laws that slow oil drilling also delay transmission lines and solar farms. But one person's red tape is another's meaningful environmental protection. While Congress mulls a compromise, the Alaska oil industry is proposing a special process for the NPRA. As AOGA proposes it, a company would apply for a permit in the reserve specifying how many wells it wants, the size and locations of the gravel pads, and other construction. If the BLM decides it meets the definition of a production site, as described in the rule, the permit would be granted within 60 days. Wachowski points out it would only apply to BLM permits. Development near waterways would still require permits from the Corps of Engineers, he says, and then there's state and North Slope Borough permits.
So there still is a whole host of other permits and opportunities for public input.
Environmental advocates in the North Slope community of New Iqsaic call it a gift to industry. Matt Jackson of the Wilderness Society says the approach wrongly assumes that one part of the NPRA is the same as any other.
We're moving development into places where it's never been before, into places with really important surface and cultural and subsistence values, and they deserve to be evaluated on their own merits, not with a cookie-cutter approach.
And Jackson says the umbrella permitting concept doesn't take into account the cumulative effects of multiple projects.
If you have one drill pad, you know, a caribou can just go around that. If you have 10 drill pads on a line stretching out for miles and miles with pipelines and roads and power lines, that makes a much bigger impact to the caribou moving to where they need to go.
The BLM has kicked off a public scoping period for an environmental impact statement that would precede the rule. It's underway until July 6. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A startup with Alaska roots wants to build a massive data center on the North Slope. Closer to the natural gas supplies it would use to generate the enormous amounts of electricity the center needs. Stack Energy's proposed $500 million data center, with a footprint of more than a square mile, would support artificial intelligence and cloud computing, according to recent reporting by the Northern Journal. So far, the idea exists only on paper, but the company has secured the state's preliminary approval to lease land off the Dalton Highway. And as Northern Journal reporter Nat Herz told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, Stack Energy has suggested it would be able to avoid some issues that data centers in the lower 48 have faced.
There's like a pretty significant backlash against AI and specifically the sort of data center construction and the environmental like impacts and resource use, right? Like significant demand on water, on power, especially. Like, I think there's a big problem in the lower 48 where basically the demand for electricity is spiking because of the build out of these facilities in a way that's like raising electricity prices for people across the country. On the North Slope, there is a huge supply of natural gas right now that's not being used. This facility would not be connected to the rest of Alaska's grid. They would basically be like self-generating power off of this abundant resource on the North Slope, presumably at a fairly competitive price, because right now there's no additional sort of demand for this natural gas that they'd be competing with. And then, you know, again, there's sort of abundant land. And then another one of the arguments that the state and the company are making is that a lot of the sort of energy and resource demand for these facilities in the lower 48 is from cooling. And on the North Slope, you know, you have a below freezing average temperature over the course of the year, I believe. And so they're saying that's like a major comparative advantage, where they'd be using what they expect to be 90% less water than a facility in the lower 48.
A lot of the hurdles, I would imagine, have to do with this plan being on the North Slope and kind of far away from the other, you know, centers of industry in the state.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a number of big question marks. And one is that this has never been done in Alaska on this scale, and certainly not on the North Slope. And so I think you can bring in engineers and people doing kind of pencil pushing and calculations and planning and say, like, we have this concept, it's compelling in all these ways. And then I think you bring it to investors and or the like AI companies and say, okay, you know, time to invest. And they're like, there's no basis that this works and hasn't been done before, so we might not trust it. I think that's like a sort of big overarching question here of, is there sort of trust that this would work, and is there real interest in doing it? And I think we don't know. That the company sponsoring this project has not really been forthcoming about like whether they have sort of customers or investors lined up for this product. And then, yeah, I mean, I think there are also some questions about, does the bandwidth and the connectivity from the North Slope, are there issues with what they call latency and sort of the lag time? But yeah, and then there's some other questions around like the turbines that are used to generate power from natural gas. Like there's a big backlog for those turbines right now, just because there's a major increase in natural gas power generation and demand. And so in some cases, they're saying like as much as 7 years. And so, you know, can this company get those natural gas turbines? Like those are some obvious questions as well.
Let's talk about the company. It's Stack Energy. Who is Stack Energy?
I don't think a lot is known about the ownership necessarily, but the woman in charge, Sparrow Mahoney, she grew up in Alaska and has had, I think, some involvement in sort of startup type businesses and in cryptocurrency. Specifically, she was involved in the Iditarod's push into cryptocurrency a few years ago. And then more interestingly, in the past year or so, they brought on some people who are like veterans of Alaska's energy and sort of business world. So you've got a former State Natural Resources Commissioner John Boyle, who's working for the company, Jim Shine, who is an attorney who used to be a special assistant at the Department of Natural Resources. And these are presumably folks that are familiar with the needs of navigating the land use and permitting process that this company has to go through. So you've seen them kind of staff up with some people who have some significant experience, which is, you know, I think at least one indication that they're sort of a serious, credible company. But then I think on the flip side of that, again, it's one thing to be paying a handful of people even competitive six-figure salaries, and it's another thing to raise the hundreds of millions of dollars that you need to actually build a project like this. So
that was Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove speaking with Northern Journal reporter Nat Herz. You can find the full story about the proposal to build a data center on the North Slope at northernjournal.com. University of Alaska officials are calling for a system-wide strategy to address challenges and opportunities ushered in by generative AI. Ben Shire is the University System's Chief Information Technology Officer. He says from internal operations to course guidelines, the university has had an ad hoc approach to AI so far. And he told the Board of Regents during a Thursday meeting in Anchorage that it's time to be more proactive.
We need to shift from really playing defense to offense. Not just operational guidelines, not just risk management, but long-term strategy to remain competitive and serve Alaskans and our world.
Shire gave some examples of steps taken by other institutions like the University of Hawaii, which created a position informally dubbed the AI Czar last year. That was part of a broader approach meant to coordinate AI integration across the University of Hawaii's 10 campuses. University of Alaska Faculty Alliance member Jenny Carroll told Regents that AI initiatives and guidelines in the UA system are fragmented, which can leave students and faculty to improvise. She compared the current situation to what she called an Alaska house, or a cabin that's repeatedly been added onto.
And I love those houses, and I actually have one up in Fort Yukon, but they can leak at the seams, right? And so I would like to start with like maybe a little bit more of a new build on AI.
Carroll says there are economic and educational stakes and that UA is responsible for protecting academic integrity while also making sure students learn skills for the modern workforce. The board didn't vote on any formal AI directives or establish new policy on Thursday. But Board of Regents Chair Scott Jepson said he thought the message of the both presenters hit the mark.
We got a gap here. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to hear that you all concur. We have a gap.
Other regents agreed high-level direction is needed, and Jepson asked administrators to draft a framework with AI-related goals and objectives by their next meeting in September. Many high schoolers pursue internships and jobs to help determine their future careers. This past semester, three Sitka High School students got the chance to shadow Search Hospital's radiology technicians. As KCAW's Ryan Cotter reports, the students are able to get a unique look at the other side of receiving healthcare, with their friendship being an anchor that enhances their learning.
Sadie Selene, Riley Bernhardt, and Allison Mayville have experienced all of their educational milestones as a trio. And in their final semester in high school this spring, the three childhood best friends continued that tradition as the first Sitka High School students to intern at a local hospital since before the COVID-19 pandemic. All three were approached by the Career and Technical Education's program coordinator last fall, when he learned they shared an interest in radiology. Mayville was inspired by her own experiences in hospital imaging departments after suffering injuries as a kid.
When you're a little kid and you go in to get your bones x-rayed, it can be very daunting and scary. I remember how comfortable they made me, and I thought that it would be nice to be able to make patients feel that level of comfort in some scary instances.
Starting in February, the group would visit Mount Edgecombe Medical Center twice a week. Bernhardt says that no 2 days were alike.
We walk in the doors, and then in their kind of break room slash work room, there's a screen that says like what scan is going on. Or if there's a tech that's about to do a scan, then they're like, oh, you can go watch an x-ray, or you can go watch an MRI or an ultrasound. Unless, like, if there's multiple going on, then often they would ask me which one I'd rather go to. And then I would follow the tech down to whatever room they're at and watch them do their thing.
Like Mayville, Bernhardt's personal health journey inspired her to help others through medicine. Last year, after struggling with knee issues for several years, she was diagnosed with rare birth defects in her knees. Bernhardt says it was interesting to now be on the other side of the care that she has received.
One that was more interesting for me was the knee MRI, just because I've had so many, so it was cool to see like the behind the scenes of everything. We haven't gone to school yet for it, so some of it isn't very clear. Mm-hmm. So they'll point out what they can see and the findings that they can see, and then they'll show us like the electronics behind it and everything. So it's been really awesome.
While their schedules at the hospital never overlapped, Selene says that their close friendship helped them get the most out of their internship.
If I saw a cool scan or something, then we have a little group chat. We'll text our group chat and just share what we saw and how the tech responded to everything. And I think it just makes our learning on a deeper level, because we're all connected through one way or another from the rad techs. And it's just special for our friendship to all experience that and have the same eagerness to learn about this specific topic.
While they gained invaluable professional experience and medical school insights from radiology technicians, Mayville also developed a greater appreciation for the soft skills the job requires.
These techs, or really anyone like a doctor or dentist, they want that relationship with you. They want you to feel comfortable and for you to trust them and everything. And they want to learn and they want to know. So you're not just burdening them always, which is sometimes how I felt. It's like, oh, these people are busy. They don't want to hear about it. But they actually do. They do want the connections and they do want to make you feel comfortable.
Bernhardt says the camaraderie the technicians demonstrated was not limited to their patients, but also to her and the rest of the radiology team.
I don't think there was a time that I wasn't laughing. Yeah. Like, while I was learning, and there was definitely moments that were, like, serious, or, like, we were with patients or something, but, like, if I wasn't with a patient or something, I was definitely laughing with someone.
They say this semester solidified their interest in radiology in the future. As the recent grads prepare for their next educational milestones, the first one where they're going their separate ways, the girls are grateful for the exposure to what makes an effective healthcare professional. In Sitka, I'm Ryan Cotter.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 26th day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose at 5:26 this morning. It will set again at 10:48. That will give us 17 hours and 22 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 18 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 71 degrees, set in 2006, and our record low was 32, set in the year 2000. It is currently 46 degrees. Overcast skies, southeast winds at 12 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility out at the airport. And the Weather Service is now calling for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day and overnight too, and tomorrow as well. Look for south winds throughout the period. Oh no, look, it looks like they want it to turn to the southwest tonight. 15 to 20 today, 10 to 15 from the southwest tonight, then back to the south at about 5 tomorrow. Look for just a chance of showers and a chance of rain tomorrow. Chance of rain tonight before 4 a.m. For Thursday, look for cloudy skies and high of 50, north winds 5 or 10. And for Friday, mostly sunny skies, high near 54. Saturday, partly sunny skies, high near 53. It is high tide. That happened just about a half hour ago here on the east side, and it was a 5.8-foot tide. Your next low tide will be at 5:16 p.m. and be 1.7 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide happened at 12:15, and that was a 10.1-foot tide in Larsen Bay, is a 10.1-foot tide. That will be followed by a low tide at 6:04 p.m. of 3 feet. Mariners, be aware, we have a small craft advisory through Wednesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles southwest, 30 today, with seas to 25 feet. For tonight, southwest 25 with 21-foot seas, and for tomorrow, southwest 15, seas to 15 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today with south winds to 20 knots and 9-foot seas. For tonight, southwest 15 and 7-foot seas. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, variable 10, seas to 3 feet, building 2 feet, building to 3 feet tomorrow night. Just outside of the city of Kodiak in Chiniak Bay, south 20 for today and tonight, becoming variable less than 10 tomorrow. 5-foot seas for today and tonight. And look for 3-foot seas tomorrow. The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association is conducting a fishing vessel drill conductor course starting tomorrow and Thursday, here right here in Kodiak. It's free. It's a fantastic course and certainly should be taken by anyone, especially someone who's new to fishing and being a mariner. That is going on from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. tomorrow. Day two, it's 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's happening at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center. The cost for the class is absolutely free for everyone, so it's a good deal, and it meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. Every vessel needs to have at least one. You can register online at www.amsea.org or call them on the phone at 907-747-3287. But again, that's tomorrow. And should be mandatory for anyone going out on a boat. KeyBank invites you to a Financial Wellness Wednesdays at the Kodiak Job Center, and the next one is tomorrow. They're going to be looking at debt management. Bring your lunch with you to this Lunch and Learn style seminar and learn financial wellness strategies from KeyBank's financial wellness experts. These workshops are free, open to everyone, and are taking place at the Kodiak Job Center's conference room. That starts at 12 p.m. tomorrow. Debt management. Living's work and in conjunction with Kodiak Island Burren School District and CANA are training people to recognize and notice and respond to situations where thoughts of suicide may be present. Learn to understand how to reach out to someone with thoughts of suicide, how to keep them safe by connecting them to further support, and explore personal community attitudes and talk directly about suicide. That's happening tomorrow, 5 to 8 p.m. at the Central Office Boardroom. No cost at all. For more information, call them at 486-7426.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.